Well, good afternoon, everybody. The show is generally referred to as After Hours. So I don't even know how to refer to it, but this is Rick Kogan, and we're going to do a 2.5 hour show that I think is filled, for those of you who are getting ready, you are now getting ready and preparing for the White Sox game at 5 o'clock, right, the pregame. I'll have a guy on named Chuck Billington who's written a fascinating book called Comiskey Park's Last World Series, A History of the 1959 White Sox. That was my favorite team of all time. Two of my favorite people begin the show, and they're going to be on for an entire hour because they have so many interesting things going on. Rich Cahan and Michael Williams, thanks for doing this, you guys. There aren't a lot of options these days. You can't go to the beach. You can't do a lot of things. So I really appreciate it. And you guys do have so much going on. I want to start with, as museums across this country and in Chicago kind of tentatively open, the most interesting exhibition I have seen pre-COVID or current pandemic is Millions of Moments at the Chicago History Museum, which I will always refer to as the Chicago Historical Society. You two curated that, didn't you?
We did. Thank you, Rick. We did curate it, and it's a pleasure to be on the show.
Thank you. Let's go back and tell the whole story. You two, with City Files Press, sometime, I don't know, 15, 16, 20 years ago, published two books about that incorporated the archives of the Sun-Times, right? And you had total access to the archives then, yes?
Go ahead, Mike.
Well, I was going to say we did. Rich had been the picture editor at the Sun-Times for many years, and then this opportunity came along in 2004 to do a couple of books. And I have to say, from the moment I stepped into that old Sun-Times building and went up to the photo morgue, I'd fallen in love. This collection is unlike any other collection that I'd ever seen. And Rich and I have had the great privilege to work with some pretty amazing collections. You know, Vivian Meyer, the Nanny photographer.
No question.
And Richard Nickel, National Archives, Library of Congress. But this collection is so comprehensive and was, you know, it's actually like three or four collections together.
Yeah.
It's the old Chicago Times, which started in 1929.
Sure.
It's the Chicago Sun, 41. It's the merger of the two into the Sun-Times. And then there's lots of elements of the Daily News in there, too. So you're talking about, you know, pretty much 80, 90 years of Chicago history. And it's not just like what you'd expect in a newspaper, which is news, sports, weather. It's all these other things. It is architecture, and it is entertainment. You know, Chicago was this centrally located town that had all the biggest names coming through from vaudeville days through, you know, movie premieres. So there's so much to it that I love coming back to it, and I always get excited when we get to work with it again.
Well, Michael, one of the things you mentioned, those were the days when celebrities and when life and the baseball player or Gene Harlow on the 20th Century Limited, they were so much more accessible, were they not?
Absolutely, and they had the photographers kind of waiting there at the train stations for them. And I can't tell you, like, the joy of back when the collection was still all together, where you could thumb through this cabinet and you would see all of the biggest names, all of the stars, you know, Jimmy Stewart and Clark Gable. I mean, it was divided then into two sections, like a biographical section, which
right.
was people, and then the subject, which was, you know, places and things.
Rush Street, for instance, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God. You could spend a life.
See, when you and Rich, I know you even having worked there, I would be excited, too, because I remember going back to what was called the morgue and just spending a day plowing through pictures and old clips. When you decided to publish those first two Sun-Times collections, did it ever occur to you that this could be your life's work? You know, let's go to the park, let's go to the beach, the Sun-Times in entertainment, the Sun-Times in politics, the Sun-Times in baseball. How did you narrow those first two books down?
Go ahead, Rich.
No, Mike, you go ahead. I'm enjoying it.
Well, I think the first thing we did was just get our arms around it.
Yeah.
I think Rich was a little bit more familiar with me than me. But once we did it, I think what we wanted to do was put together this kind of timeline of the significant events in Chicago history, because I'm a picture person, so I kind of remember things through iconic pictures, and in that way, I think we wanted to kind of reconstruct this, the better part of the 20th century, through these iconic photographs. And the fascinating thing that I don't think a lot of people know about, but Chicago was just an amazing town for photojournalism. You had all these papers, you had all these photographers, and particularly with the Chicago Times and the Sun and the Sun-Times, they loved to feature their photographs.
Yeah.
They
much more
let
so
these photographers
much,
spread out.
Much more so, I would say, from my limited historical knowledge, much more so than the Tribune ever did. Is that true, Rich, do you think?
Yeah, it's absolutely true, Rick. Yeah. The Sun-Times was called the Chicago's picture newspaper.
Right.
It was a tabloid, and so it really lent itself to a big picture or two pictures on the front page or a big picture in the sports section, and they really cared a lot about pictures. The Tribune in our era, starting in the 80s through now, I think has always been a great, always had a great photo staff.
No question.
But they've never showcased pictures the way the Sun-Times has.
Yeah, it was always, I suppose it was Colonel McCormick's, you know, the photos were not serious enough for that.
Exactly.
For that
exactly.
Lunatic.
The Tribune always wanted to be a little more highbrow than the Sun-Times, and so they were limited because they figured that pictures appealed too much to the masses.
To the regular people. Yeah.
Exactly.
Gee, what a brilliant marketing move that was. I am on the phone for this entire hour with my friends, Rich Cahan and Michael Williams, who have collaborated on a number of books, many of which we'll talk about. And the show, we haven't gotten to the show at the Chicago History Museum, Millions of Moments, and the new, late, you guys, please, you're friends of mine, later in this show, do not let me forget to talk about this Obama book, please. Okay.
Great.
Yeah, that is fantastic. We'll take a little break here and we'll come back. And I want to talk about one of the amazing things about photos is it is like you're walking through, in a book, a gallery of artists who are basically anonymous and never got the kind of due. And I think they are artists. And we'll talk about that after a short break. Welcome to After Hours in the middle of the afternoon. I'm just going to call it Afternoon with Rick Kogan. On the phone are Rich Cahan and Michael Williams, who's City Files Press. That is the website of their remarkable publishing company, City Files Press, where you can get most of the books we're talking about. We're currently talking about two collections that they made from the vast archives of the Chicago Sun-Times, a little Daily News, a little Times, and the Millions of Moments show that is currently at the Chicago History Museum that I will always refer to as the Historical Society. Gentlemen, you curated the show. It's an unbelievable, I mean, it stunned me, and I was expecting to be stunned. Now, let go back. When the Sun-Times was sadly in bankruptcy, as I'm sure every paper in this country is going to be eventually, the photos were auctioned off to a, let me, how shall I say it? Well, he's in jail, so I'll say a disreputable person. Did you know about that auction? Did you guys know they were auctioning it off?
Well, Rick, this was in 2009.
Yeah.
I don't think we knew before it happened.
Right.
It wasn't actually auctioned. It was actually sold to John Rogers, who had an interesting scheme.
Mm-hmm.
He bought newspaper archives, both negatives and prints,
mm-hmm.
and then he would sell the prints online. He gave the Sun-Times, I think, close to $1 million to do this.
Wow.
And then he would digitize. He said he was going to digitize every print and every negative, and that's a tall order. That's millions and millions of
dollars.
Scans, hours,
yeah.
And he never got through to that, and he's now in jail for a variety of things. And
yeah, he had some other scams going.
Yeah, including walking away with the George Brace photo collection.
The famous baseball photographer. Yeah.
Exactly.
And so were they hidden? Then someone bought them again, and the collection was sold to someplace.
Well, first off, he put the photographs online, and over the last 10 years, Mike has purchased a lot of those photographs because we love that collection, and that was the only way we could save anything. Mike, I think, has purchased hundreds of those photographs.
In purchasing those, would you, the purchaser, would have the rights to them then? or no?
No, you got the physical copy of the picture, but the copyright was always retained by the newspaper. But it was really sad. You would see the most famous pictures. I mean, all of the pictures that were in our books were sold there on eBay. Oh. And these things, as you say, they're pieces of art. They should be in museums. They shouldn't be just kind of sold. And sadly, there were not a whole lot of people bidding on them either. So it just seemed like it was really important that somebody try to capture some of these most important ones so that they can be, put hopefully back into the History Museum as part of a permanent collection. But this was, as you said, newspapers were going bankrupt, and this was one of the few assets that they had at the time, was their photo archives.
Now, believe me, if they could, they'd sell staff into slave ships or something.
Well, yeah, and unfortunately, this is... It's amazing. People have made a living out of doing this.
Yeah,
so many papers.
Sure.
I mean, literally, probably 20 or 30 have been sold this way, and it continues.
Now, were you worried? I know that some outfit called Historic Images then bought them. There must have been some fear on your part, Rich Cahan and Michael Williams, that these photos, and there were hundreds of thousands of them, would be lost, in a word.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I would say from the time we worked on these books and then when newspapers started going under, it was constantly on our minds about what was going to happen to this collection. How can we work as advocates to save the collection? And I think that's how eventually it's wound up at the History Museum, which it could not be a better home for it. They put so much effort into the archiving of it. And it's going to stay safe. It'll be in Chicago for all of eternity.
And the digitizing process, as you said, Rich, is very expensive and going to be very lengthy. But you can go to the Chicago History Museum site, which is chicagohistory.org, and start to sample these, can't you?
You certainly can.
Yeah.
And Mike told half the story. He was... I don't think anyone in Chicago cares more about these photographs than Mike, and I'm his accomplice on this. But he watched these photographs be sold to another very reputable institution called Historic Images, where he continued to buy pictures, and he struck up a relationship with the owner of Historic Images, and we went down to Memphis, where they are, several times to look through photographs, and so we were very aware that Historic Images was selling several million of the photographs to another collector in Chicago, and that's where we made the connection between the Chicago History, or suggested the connection between the Chicago History Museum and this collector. And so it was really remarkable that the History Museum, A, listened to us.
Yeah, right, right.
and B, had the foresight to go out to see the collection, to purchase the collection, and now they've raised hundreds of thousands of dollars to digitize millions of photographs. So it's like a dream come true.
When they said to you two, I suppose mid-pandemic, we're going to do a show, and we would like you to curate this, at one point it must have been a wonderful challenge because it's daunting. You have to select from this vast trove the pictures that you think represent, millions of moments.
Well,
or was it just exciting?
Well,
it might have been just exciting.
Opportunity. Number one, it was cool to be able to revisit the collection again with new eyes. And I think, a lot has changed in America and in Chicago in the last 15 years. So it gave us that opportunity to go back and mine more things. And that's the interesting thing about a photo archive is that pictures that were taken 20, 30, 70 years ago, they may not have been that important then,
but
events change, and certain images take on so much more importance. So I think that's what we were trying to do this second time around, is look for those key images that kind of bring us up to date.
Well, they've not changed in the last 70 years. They've changed in the last 7 weeks, for God's sake, to inform and how those pictures do. And I hate that old... picture 1,000 words thing, but pictures are to me, and always have been, my undying affection for the sometimes crazy but always distinctive people who used to take photos. Rich and I knew a number of them. I know you have too, Michael. What have you learned about the photographers themselves in this, because it is a you know, from Henry Hare Gill to Carmen Reporto to my father, who was a newspaperman once. I was very young, and he said, we're going to a nightclub tonight. I think I was 6 years old, and it was on Grand Avenue on the second floor of some place, and I met a guy named Louis Gampa.
Yeah.
The name stuck with me forever. Who was? I said, well, Dad, who is this man? Is he a gangster? My father, no, he's a newspaper photographer. And from that moment on, I think I was ever intrigued. They were and remain sort of big personalities, do they not? Unsung personalities.
Absolutely. Rick, you can relate to this because we worked at the Sun-Times together for a short while, that there are many, usually reporters get out and they interview people and they talk to people, but there are times when a reporter doesn't get a chance to get out, and they literally will send a photographer out, and they'll ask the photographer, so let me take a look at this picture. I want to see what this person looks like. Photographers are absolutely the unsung heroes of journalism. They're expected to know their way around the city. They're expected to work their way into the homes of perhaps a grieving family, the family of a police officer, and then somehow take what is probably going to be the most amazing picture of that family, whether there's crisis or it's a business photo, and come right back to the paper, and so we can all see it the next morning.
And fill in the lazy reporter about what the family had to say.
Someone recently described John H. White, who's African American, and Bob Black and Brian Jackson is when they arrived at the scene, they were the kings. They were royalty. Their community looked up to them with such pride and affection, and that they were telling the story of the whole city. Yeah. And it's been a pleasure to.
Well, and those three guys you mentioned are just personable. That's the other thing. In order to really get the kind of photos that one needs or that make art, the personality of the photographer has to come into play. Don't you both agree?
Absolutely. I think there's like no room for the meek if you're going to be a press photographer. You've got to be able to bully your way to the front of the line. You've got to talk your way into really difficult situations. And back in the day, sometimes you only had one frame to shoot on your 4x5 camera.
Yeah.
And you had to get it right the first time. It's a lot different than today where you've got a data card in your phone or in your digital camera where you can take literally thousands of pictures. These guys were good, and they had to be good. They had to make sure they got that shot the first time.
In a couple minutes before we take another break, and then we'll come back and get into this History Museum thing a little more in the Obama book. And you can get, if you go to cityfilespress.com, you will see it's a lovely website that will give you it's not all Chicago pictures, ladies and gentlemen. There's some stunning stuff here. Aftershock, The Human Toll of War, which is one of your recent books, is just incredible, as is River of Blood. Let's wait till after the commercial to ask you guys about the anonymity. Well, talk to me for a second. Did you encounter photographers in searching all of this who you had never heard of before? And who you just like discovering Vivian Meyer?
Well, it's funny. Rich likes to give me a hard time because I revere the Sun-Times staff like you revere the 1959 White Sox. I mean, I would put out a set of trading cards if I could. And each of these guys had their own kind of talents and their own interests, and you really get a sense that they were dispatched based on those particular talents and interests. And I think Bill Sturm is a guy for me. He's a Sun-Times guy who, like, if it was the last streetcar going through Chicago, he'd be the guy there. The last, steam train coming out of Chicago, he'd be the guy there. He had a sense of history. He had a wonderful way of almost making them like little poems, these photographs. So, I could go on forever about these guys.
Well, there's something. Tell me in 45 seconds, Rich Cahan, what in the day, in the 20s and 30s, what would draw a person to become a newspaper photographer? Obviously, they knew something about photography, but it's still, there were a lot of ways they could have gone.
Right. You hit the nail on the head when you said they were they were guys with big personalities.
Yeah.
Bob Katalik was in charge of the pigeons at the early Chicago newspapers, but he had a great personality, and so they gave him a camera and they got him on the street. It was people who knew their way around the city, who could talk their way into anything, and who were just vivacious, and it's not like they had any great art skills at the time, but they learned on the job. They knew they had to produce a picture for a half a million or a million people the next morning.
See, I love the whole notion, too, of self-made artists. I love that.
Yeah.
We'll be back after a short break with Rich Cahan and Michael Williams to talk a little bit more about the millions of moments, which just go to chicagohistory.org and figure out how to get in and see it, because it's really a remarkable show. And then we'll talk about this Obama book. Thanks, fellas. We'll be right back. Welcome back to what we'll now be calling Afternoon Hours with Rick Cogan. That would be me. On the phone, I'm having a marvelous time with Rich Cahan and Mike Williams, because they produce fantastic, fantastic photo books embellished with their own words. I'll tell you a little bit about that Obama thing. We're talking specifically about everything. But Millions of Moments is a current exhibition, I suppose, open-ended. Yes, fellas, at the History Museum?
It is, Rick. And the nice thing is it's at the very front of the museum before you even have to pay. So you can actually go and see that and have a... You don't have to, but it's kind of connected to a cafe, and you can eat outside, and we hope it will seduce you into the museum.
Oh, there's no question about it. I've been running around that place since I was 4 years old, and this is, except for the diorama of the Chicago Fire, the best thing they've ever had in there. Your books, fellas, how many are there now?
I think we've done close to between 15 and 20.
Yeah, I think we're close to 20 now.
What dictates, you started this company and I'm not going to say flourished, but you have thrived in the worst publishing environment since Gutenberg was playing darts or whatever he did before inventing the printing press. It's been glorious for you two, hasn't it?
Struggle. It has, Rick, because we've had a chance to create work that we really care about and we think that other people should care about. Most of our early work was about Chicago, and most of our work since then has been about issues that we think are really important for America, things like slavery that you mentioned, and things like what the world looked like in 1945 and the incarceration of Japanese Americans during World War II. So it's been a dream come true in that we've been able to do exactly the kind of work that we want to do. Commercially, when you do the work that you want to do, it's not always quite the dream that you hoped for, but we keep going.
How did you two, I'm sure I've asked you this before, but now that I'm thinking I may write about the two of you soon. How did you two meet? How did you first come together? Rich, I've known you for a long time, and
we got
to know each other really well when you were working with the one and only Gary Comer on that remarkable City 2000 project. And I met you later, Michael. How did you two get, was there a meeting for, sort of a self-help group for photo fanatics?
Just about. Mike, you can tell the story better than I can.
Well, Rich had a store called City Files.
Oh, did I love that store? Yeah.
Oh, it was incredible. I was his best customer. I would go in there all the time. And we got to talking about all the different dream projects that we'd like to do, kind of if we could call the shots. And at the time, if you were working with a publisher, generally you did not have a whole lot of control over your project.
Oh,
you
no kidding.
And we every detail of a book, like we labor over. So we kind of put together a little list of projects that we wanted to do, and that's kind of where we came from. We just have just kind of said, let's just keep going if we ever have a flop, the whole thing might fall apart. But the idea was, let's just kind of keep this thing going and mine these overlooked collections. So that's really where it came from, just kind of doing things that nobody else wanted to do or wanted to take a chance to do, things that might not be.
Well, I mean, to give some man like Edgar Miller his due, to give Vivian Meyer her due, you have just, who buys photo books, fellas? Do you know? You must know a little bit. It can't be. I think you probably hit a new audience. You probably hit some people who have never thought of buying a photo collection between covers?
Well, you know, it really has evolved over the years. When we did Real Chicago and Real Chicago Sports back in 2004, they were probably our two most successful books, and it was based on this city filled with people who just love Chicago and its history.
Yeah.
We didn't even have to do any real press or anything for it. They just flew out the door. And now that kind of generation is not perhaps buying as many books.
Yeah.
And I think the people who are buying our books now, it's a whole new generation of people. But I think the one thing that they all have in common is they just react to photographs in this way, that they respond to photographs. And in some ways, I guess I'm in one of those categories. I really am moved by a powerful photograph. Yeah.
And I think one of the things, too, that we've lived in, all of us have lived through this age when everybody thinks anybody can be a photographer because they own an iPhone. And I think in some ways it's diminished the art involved, the art or happenstance or the what was that famous song, the perfect moment that exists.
Right, the decisive moment.
Decisive moment. Who was that? Capra?
I know who Henry Latrigue. Oh.
Yeah. No. Cartier-Bresson.
Cartier-Bresson. That's right. Thank you.
That's somehow been diminished. But I still think the value of these books is that when someone sees this, they will say, well, gee, that's not like any of the photos on my iPhone. I think that's part of it, don't you?
You know, Rick, I don't agree. I think that photographs are better than ever, and I think people with iPhones are taking pictures that we couldn't have even dreamed about years ago, documenting their life, documenting their world around it. I'm thrilled by the new photography. But that just makes us heighten our game, and that's what makes we really look for collections of photographs that can't be recreated today. But I think we would love to do. I mean, the Obama book is a contemporary book, and
that we can delve again, ladies and gentlemen. Go to ChicagoHistory.org and CityFilesPress.com. The latest it came out days ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Last Tuesday.
Barack Obama, Uncommon Grace. Is this only, I see it here as a Kindle edition. What, how did this happen?
It's an e-book. It's probably never going to be a traditional book, and we're thrilled by it because e-books give us the chance to show pictures in incredible resolution. It makes our books much more affordable. This book is $9.99. You can get it at the
Is that
store.
Right? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And timeliness, you can produce, it doesn't take years and years to produce a book, and it's the way people read these days. If we hear one more person say, I would buy that book, but I don't have any more room in our house, I say, well, you can now buy the ebook,
That's great. And, well, how hard a decision was it a decision? Did you think about conventional?
Yeah. The world is changing, Rick. And
tell me about it. Yeah.
Yeah. And we realize that more and more people are embracing ebooks. That doesn't mean that we're giving up on traditional books, but it's an important, powerful way of communicating. And I think for journalists especially, and Mike and I both consider ourselves journalists.
As well you should.
Yeah, it's a real key way to reach out to people so that, they can hear about this book and they can go right to Amazon or they can go to the Apple store and within seconds they can see they can sample the book and they can download the book. And we're as proud of this book as any we've done because we think it's important for people to see. We think it's a book about leadership, and about presidential leadership. And I think that there are, like all of our books, there are many things that we don't specify in the book, but it'll be very clear when you read this book how there's a distinct subject that we're trying to talk about.
As you write in this collaborative foreword, I suppose it is, or introduction, you write, this is the first book that takes a comprehensive look at the Obama White House years through photographs from all seven photographers who worked in the White House photo office. Together, they took an estimated 4.3 million photographs. That makes an average of 1,500 a day during the Obama presidency. Well, I read that, I was just flabbergasted. please, yeah. but flabbergasted. And all those photos still exist, you know, too, right?
Absolutely, and they are stunning, and they're important historically. I hope one day we will get back to an era of Obama, an era of a presidency like Obama, and I think that it's funny. Our copy editor was looking at the book, and he said he thought it was as dated as our books about World War II, that it's almost like another time. You can't believe a president is being picked up by children at a school after he kind of fake falls, or he's listening to the with a stethoscope to the heart of a little boy, a student. And he would go out for pizza, and he would go out meet people in cafes, cafeterias, and talk to them about America. It's startlingly beautiful.
The key line, one of the key lines in this fabulous, and your introduction to this book is wonderful. Pete Souza, a former Tribune photographer, was the sort of lead photographer during many years of Obama's presidency, and you quote him saying, Pete was assigned to photograph Obama on his first full day in the U.S. Senate in January 2005. Souza met Obama as he was eating a quick sandwich in his temporary Senate office. Quote, "I'm making this intimate picture, and there's no recognition that I am even there," end right. quote, Souza says. Quote, "He's just so comfortable in his own skin." I'm not sure that's the current state of affairs, but that does say a great deal about Obama. And the pictures I've seen in this book and elsewhere, and some of the pictures are just this is one of the most iconic photos in history, I think I'm safe to say without any real deep historical perspective, is that photo in the you talk about it, the iconic and one of the most widely seen photos ever.
Right. You're talking about the raid, the Bin Laden raid. Yeah, it is a very important photo. But interestingly, when you look at this book, it's not a very political book at all. It's
not trying to convince you that
Obamacare is good. It's really looking at a man who loved his family, who loved America, who went around the world to spread the spirit of America.
Yeah. That's the thing. There's an intimacy to it that is that will linger with you forever. We got to take one last break. I want to keep talking about this book and exactly how it came to be with Michael Williams and Rich Cahan. They run cityfilespress.com, and they have an amazing exhibit at the Chicago History Museum. And just go to chicagohistory.org, make your reservations or whatever you need to do to get in to see it, and then access the 1,000, I think they're up to about 5,500, or I don't know how many photos you can see in there. But the show's worth every minute of your time, and it will get you out of the house, and we will be right back. Welcome back. I will finish this hour with Rich Cahan and Michael Williams, and I thank you both for taking the time in the middle of the afternoon. But once again, what else would you be doing now? We're talking now, I told you enough about, I'm just going to say once again, chicagohistory.org, cityfilespress.com. We're now talking about a recently published book, Barack Obama, Uncommon Grace. It is an e-book, but it is a marvel, I think, that really shows you what it was like in the life of Barack Obama and his family and the White House and, in a way, the country. It's available now. All you have to do is type. One of the great things about the internet, you get Barack Obama. You pay $9.99, and you can have it. You can have it in 2 minutes, and it's there. And it really is stunning. How did it come to be? Pete Souza, who used to work at the Tribune, was the White House photographer. He was the chief of these 7 photographers. He did a photograph book of his own, "The Rise of Barack Obama," published during the 1908 presidential run. How did this book come to be?
Well, we've been huge fans of Pete Souza and his photographs since 2009 when in the first term began. And we kind of kept gathering his photographs that were online. Mm-hmm. And we were interested in doing the book soon after Obama left office, but we felt like the time wasn't right, that there was a new era and a new presidency, and we should just sit back and see what happens.
And we felt actually during the pandemic, we've been talking about this for years, but we decided this was our pandemic project. We spent about 12 hours a day every day on it. And we felt that the time was right to remind America what a president can look like.
Well, and also to enlighten America about what a president does, too. I think that's, there weren't, I think you have this in your lovely introduction, too, that the first president to be sort of photographed in this kind of intimate, right on his shoulder kind of way was John Kennedy, right?
He was, but certainly, like you said, Barack Obama was the most at ease president of all time. He put very few restrictions on the photographers. And we love Pete's work, but Pete has really focused on his work alone. And there were six other White House photographers, and I think this rounds it out in an incredible manner. They were all skilled, incredibly skilled.
And were they all sort of eager when you proposed this idea to them?
You know, I would say they weren't because it's not that they were not eager, but I don't even think that they could visualize it.
Well, the idea had never been broached to them, and they
and they
each would have tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of photos, and they're like, did they ever, when you, it's a collaborative venture, and did the photographers ever say, hey, my favorite photo is this, or did you kind of have free rein to plow through them all?
Yeah, all these photographs were taken we all own these photos. Every American owns these photographs. So the material was there to be taken. And I think that it was Lawrence Jackson who just himself published a beautiful book last year called Yes, We Did, that was most understanding of what an important time in this country it was for these photographs to all be seen together.
How hard was it for you two to pick? There's some, I didn't count them, but they got to be 200-300, right?
Yeah, there's about 300 pictures. And I think the interesting thing about this is when you're dealing with a collection, generally certain themes emerge and a book kind of structures itself around the collection itself. So in that way, I think these themes emerged, and certainly, I think given what was kind of going on in the world today with our current president, that certain pictures really spoke out about that's kind of what we're talking about. This picture really shows the difference between the two presidents. So in that way, I mean, I found the whole process kind of restorative and therapeutic in working on it. And that's kind of the feedback that we've gotten so far, is that people, you know, they think to themselves, did this actually happen? I can't. And as Rich said, it seems like a million years ago that this happened. The world has changed so much. So I think in that way, it's kind of a tonic of sorts right now to look at this book.
Well, one of the things, too, I think you've done a wonderful job of keeping it, as you say, kind of apolitical on the surface, certainly. And were any of the photographers territorial about their work? I mean, I know they know that the American public owns these things. Were they either territorial or, wait a minute, I want my book in a hardcover? You know what I mean?
Right. Actually, I think it's Pete who is the most territorial.
As usual.
He didn't really want to participate in we emailed him a lot and asked him questions, but he just didn't want to take part in it, because I think frankly Pete feels like he owns the story, and actually he's a fantastic photographer, but the story is owned by all of us, and these other photographers are important too.
Where are all those millions of photos? Where do they live?
They're on servers, and they're now in custody of the National Archives. Mm-hmm. And starting in 2022, 5 years after Obama stepped
office,
down,
yeah,
they'll be made more available, but on a kind of a slow basis. They're actually subject to the Freedom of Information Act, believe it or not.
Oh, I'm sure.
But there are about 15,000 of them available now online. That was our pool.
It's a wonderful thing, and I think even in this age when I know you love the iPhone photo, and we all seem to be able to easily intrude into the lives of others, whether it's through TMZ or all other means, There's something so remarkable about still photographs, because they do capture, as you both have said, a moment. It is a series of moments that tell a story. There's a narrative to it, yes?
There's
has a certain power. I learned about the civil rights movement through the still photographs in Selma, and obviously we all learned about the Vietnam War through the shooting of the on the Saigon streets. That, you know, in theory, video moving images should be more powerful, but it's just not the case. For some reason, our brain really remembers the still image more than the moving image.
Yeah, because do you think it actually, in my romanticized way, do you think it really sears itself into the brain or the subconscious? Because I can recall a photograph much more easily than I can recall a film clip.
Boy, I would agree with you, Rick. I know there's events that I didn't even live through.
But it's these
photographs that have become, you know, kind of part of our collective memory. So I would totally agree that these are kind of the touchstones by which we kind of judge time and that we look back at history.
Mm. Now, the success of this book, and I am hoping it deserves to be incredibly successful, especially at that accessible, it's more than accessible, it's like you're giving it away, frankly. Might this is your first venture into that kind of thing, might it inspire future works?
We're very excited about the potential. I keep thinking about journalistic books. You know, mm-hmm. imagine a book on Portland 2020.
Ooh.
That so there's this. Rick, I know how concerned you are, and I share absolutely the same concerns about the future of journalism. And
sure.
I see e-books as a possibility for extended, important documentary journalism, whether it's photographs or whether it's words. I think
Yeah, I think also, you know, you can sort of print this. You know, what I did with this book, of course, was look at it on a screen, and then I printed it out.
I did.
So I could, like, have it and look through it and mess it up and write on it. Let me ask you about, finish this off, and again, thank you guys so much for doing this.
Thank you, Rick.
Has there been any horribly contentious moments in your business personal relationship during this, what I think is really an astonishing publishing run?
Absolutely. We are terrible basketball opponents. People cannot believe that we've been working together for 20 years when they hear us on the basketball court yelling at each other.
Sharp elbows, too, or no?
Mostly words. He's a lot better than me. We played in Hong Kong, and somebody thought that I was his father, even though I'm only 15 years older.
Well, Michael does look young, and that's the thing.
He's a good basketball player.
With all sincerity, we've never had a serious argument ever. I think that we're both kind of committed to the same idea, and we do everything we can to make these things, you know, these books happen. And there's been no bumps. Knock on wood.
Well, I'm so pleased, because who knows? I mean, the publishing business is likely to change dramatically in the face of what we're all facing. And I think you guys are it's a bold move. This Barack Obama,
right with it.
Uncommon Grace is a bold move into the future of certainly City Files publishing, but I think publishing in general.
I think people will get a new appreciation of the whole idea of ebooks when they download this.
Yeah,
they'll be.
Too.
It'll be startling to them to see what great pictures can be and with words, and we're excited about it.
Well, there are no two better people to do that than you or Rich Cahan, who's just speaking, and Michael Williams. I'll give you this again, cityfilespress.com will take you to the site where you can buy books and learn a little bit more about them, and chicagohistory.org. will be the door by which you can get in at the Chicago History Museum and see their curatorial work for a remarkable show called Millions of Moments, which feature one of the nice things for me, fellows, was just to see the names of so many guys I remember.
And to see pictures that are 2 feet by 3 feet.
Yes,
those little
exactly.
pictures that you saw in newspapers surround you, and you're in this, like, an environment.
It's, you know, good for you guys and good for the History Museum, too, to do this right. Thank you both. Go now do whatever you were going to do on a sunny Sunday afternoon, but you can't go to the beach. You can't do a lot of things. I miss
we
seeing
really
you guys.
Appreciate all of your support.
Oh, always. So many years. Forever. Thank you both very much. Take care.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. That was, again, Rich Cahan and Michael Williams talking about the Sun. It's an astonishing exhibit. I don't care if you love newspapers or not. It's just such a cool exhibit at the Chicago History Museum at North and Clark. And take a look at this Obama book. I'm not kidding. $9.95. Many, many, many of the 300 pictures never published before.